I think it gave me a very good perspective on the range of Pesach Minhagim. And it was so important to me that even if you have very restrictive Pesach Minhagim, you'll find recipes to make in my book.
Hi, I'm Alex Fletcher.
And I'm Rivki Silver.
And this is Deep, Meaningful Conversations, powered by Town Appliance.
Alex and I wear a lot of hats.
We're both writers.
And speakers.
And so many other things, mothers, wives, friends, and active community members.
We love using our skill sets to bring you the best guests to share their wisdom, perspective, and advice on relevant topics.
And we love schmoozing about the topics that are on our mind, and hopefully yours too. Like one listener said, DMC is like hanging out with friends for coffee and talking about the stuff we're all thinking about.
So whatever you're doing while listening to our podcast, thanks for joining us for a DMC.
We'd like to give a big thank you to Town Appliance for being our podcast sponsor. Did you know that Town Appliance is the largest appliance retailer in the tri-state area? They offer their customers the lowest possible price for any appliance they choose.
Town Appliance is known for providing the best, most honest, and most efficient customer service there is. Town Appliance carries all major appliance brands displayed in three large showrooms in, say it with me, Lakewood, Cedarhurst, and Baltimore. They offer a wide selection of appliances in-store and online, covering all your household needs, which is like a refrigeration, cooking, laundry, dishwashing, cooling, and heating, as well as outdoor living. So like literally inside and out, Town Appliance doesn't just sell appliances. They sell like things you need for your life.
Mm-hmm. So their website and contact information can be found in our show notes, and please check them out. Another thank you to our friends at We by SR Play for sponsoring today's episode of DMC. So We is the leader in backyard fun and safety. You need both. Playgrounds really are central to children's physical, emotional, social development. So when you are purchasing one, you are really investing in your children. We offers customized playsets so you can create that magical space for your kids in your own backyard. And they're the leading manufacturer of playsets since 2010.
That's a long time. Mm-hmm. So if you want exceptional quality, safety, and customer service, then We is your brand for your next playset. We plus you equals lasting fun. And they even gave us a coupon code for our listeners. Use DMCFREE24 for a free accessory. You'll find their contact information in our show notes, as well as a website link where you can download their catalog.
We'd also like to thank Appaman for sponsoring today's episode. So if you haven't started shopping for your kids for Pesach yet, no worries. It's really not too late. Appaman to the rescue.
Appaman is your stop to get the looks that you and your kids want and the quality that you are looking for. They are a premier children's clothing brand with an extensive selection of high-quality garments, from impeccably crafted suits, so cute on little boys, to cozy winter coats and fashionable sportswear. They cater to diverse tastes and needs of both moms and kids. Appaman is known for their distinctive designs and trend-setting styles.
You may be familiar with Appaman's popular coats, and if you haven't heard about their washable suits for boys, well, they are a lifesaver. Appaman also has a great collection of seasonal clothes for boys and girls, so check out their website, which you'll find in our show notes.
And we also have a discount code for you with this one, DMC20 for 20% off applicable site-wide, excluding the core collection, but everything else this applies to, and you will find that in our show notes with their link.
We are so glad you joined us for another episode of DMC. So, you know, we've gotten a bunch of lovely emails lately.
Yeah, it's so nice. We've
actually started posting some of the nuggets that we think are actually quite inspiring from real women and their lives. We post them on Fridays. We call it, you know, Feedback Fridays. If you'd like to see those, you can check out our social media, or you can join our WhatsApp group, too. We post them there. The link for that is in our show notes. And I just wanted to really take this opportunity to share that, you know, we're so grateful that so many of you are enjoying our content. I'm assuming that if you're listening now, you know, you're coming back because you like it. There's something about it that you like. Rivki and I, you know, so love producing this podcast, both for you, you know, and for us. And I think this is the perfect opportunity to share that with you. This is like one of our favorite types of episodes is the pre-Yontov episode, because it gives us our Yom Tov Chizuk. It puts us in the mindset for Yom Tov. So thank you, all our listeners, for giving us the opportunity to do this.
Yeah, it's such a good way to put it. It's so gratifying to be part of a project that both benefits those that we're reaching, as well as, you know, we get benefit ourselves for it. Mm-hmm. And like you said, pre-Yontov episodes are some of our favorites. I love that, you know, because we're also recording this like a little while before the episode even comes out. So it's like getting us in the spirit and in the mind, like getting kind of that mindset going. And we, like, I don't know, now I kind of counted them to like get me going with like thinking about what I need to be thinking about wise.
And you bet, we, I don't know about you, Rifki, I do listen. Do you, I mean, I know you listen while you're editing, but I also listen when it's live.
I listen when I'm editing, because if I'm listening when I'm editing and then listening live is like too much listening to myself. Like I can only handle so much, but yes, but I'm glad that you listen live.
Yeah, nice. For sure. No, I think I find them very helpful. So many months ago, we saw that Miriam Pascal Cohen was putting out a Pesach cookbook, and we're like, yep, we got to snag her for DMC. We know she's going to be everywhere promoting her book, and we need her. And I'm sure she's going to be on multiple podcasts, but she's coming to us for our, you know, special DMC style. You know, certainly we're happy to have her on to promote her book, but we also know that with a cookbook called Real Life Pesach Cooking, she'd just be a perfect guest and perfect fit for us.
Exactly. So for sure, we want to learn all about the overtime cook, how she's known. That's like her, you know, nom de plume or whatever we want to call it. That's a fancy word. Sorry. We want to hear all about how she's built this amazing kosher cooking brand. And we also want her to help us when it comes to Pesach cooking. So Miriam, we are looking forward to getting your tips and tricks. And we love Real Life Pesach Cooking.
Yes. But wait, Rifki, I'm sure we could also share some of our own real life wisdom. That's what we do best, real life.
Real life, exactly. We're authentic
here. We're not trying
too
hard.
I don't know. I try a little hard sometimes, but I know what you mean.
With our, you know, with our listeners when it comes to Pesach cooking, because, you know, I think that we're both pretty real life, pretty honest. So, Rifki, tell us, what would you say is your most, like, quote unquote, real life Pesach cooking hack?
Okay, I have like two things. The first thing that just popped into my mind, literally the second, is I have a Google Doc spreadsheet that I keep from year to year, where it says, like, buy this, don't buy this. Like, it happened because there was one year when I just kept thinking that I needed ground nuts. And this is before now I have kids with nut allergies, so I don't really use ground nuts anymore. But back in the day when I used to use ground nuts, I would like not really know how much I would need. So I would just like buy and buy frantically at the store. And then like I would end up with like tons in my freezer for the next year. And then the next year would come and I would forget that I had them in my freezer. And I would be like, I'm going to need them. And then I would buy more. And then I had like, I can't even tell you how many like crushed filberts I had. That's that funny. Were just like sitting there being frozen from year to year and not being used. And finally I was like, this is not functional. So I made a Google Doc where I said, like, do not buy ground nuts, or like, you need this or you don't need this or whatever. You know, you don't need that much of this next year, or like things like that. So I found that very helpful.
It's so smart, because like I totally rely on my memory way more than I should. Like I keep thinking like, oh, you're going to remember this next year. And you never do. You need to write yourself notes.
It really, like the invention of Google Docs, I used to have like a binder, but then I could never find the binder, or the binder would be packed away with the Pesach
stuff. That's a problem.
Before, like, totally. So I use Google Docs now, which is it's never chametzdig. It's on my computer.
Do you put, by the way, like how many pounds of matzah you bought, and if it worked, and if you bought too much, too little?
So that's my husband's apartment. So okay, like, he keeps track of that. But I do say like how many things of like, you know, cake meal do I need, or whatever, something like that.
It's really wise.
Yeah.
What's your second one?
The second one, well, this is like a little bit not fair. I was like debating if I should say this or not. My second one is that I have a Pesach kitchen. But it's not like fancy. Like if you're picturing like a beautiful room that's locked away and everything's in cupboards and there's a functional looking sink.
Renovated.
Ladies, let me tell you what it is. It is called my laundry room in the basement. And I have a counter where I fold the laundry usually and I cover it and I shut off my laundry chute. So like for like the month or however I'm using it, like I have to schlep all the laundry from upstairs to downstairs because I live in Cleveland, not in a place like Lakewood where the laundry machines are upstairs already. Mm-hmm. No, mine are in the basement. And so like it's a whole thing. And
you also don't want your laundry like flying onto your...
Do I want my chametzdig laundry falling onto my kosher lepesach counter? No, I don't.
And as you're cooking.
Yeah, no, forget that. So no. So I schlep it down, fine. And then, you know, I have like a stove and I have a refrigerator and I use my laundry sink for the sink. It's like really not, it's like not glamorous.
Oven? Like a stove oven?
Yeah, like a stove oven. And like it's not glamorous at all and it's not aesthetic at all. Sometimes when I'm doing stories in the basement, I'm like, look, here I am. There's like pipes, like the, like, you know, cinder block walls.
Love
it's
it.
Like not.
Hanging light bulb.
Yeah. Well, no, Baruch Hashem, we have now a nicer light than that. Mm-hmm. But it's, you know, not aesthetic, but it's functional and it's amazing to be able to
it's
start ahead of time. So
it's
there
such
you go.
A blessing. Yes. I love it.
It is.
I love it. So for me, you know, for most of our marriage, we had the blessing to go to my in-laws for Pesach. And I'm also proud to say that my parents, I'm an only child. My parents also go to my in-laws, and they live they lived in New Jersey, and it was very, very special. And all of my children's Pesach memories are really surrounded, you know, with spending this special time with our grandparents.
That is so nice. And, like, yeah, that's very foundational to Pesach in general.
I think so.
The Haggadah Kala Bincha, like, you know what I mean? It's like the generations passing along this Masorah.
And like the foods, their Pesach foods are their, you know, their grandmother's foods, their softest foods, and that's become my Pesach foods, and that's what I wanted to share. It's like,
so nice.
It is. I'm very blessed. As I said, I did not grow up with my grandparents. Both sets of grandparents had passed away by the time I was like 10. So I totally did not have that in my life. So, you know, a lot of my recipes come from my mother-in-law, and we always loved two ice creams that she would make just for Pesach. And one was like a lemon like a whipped base, like a lemon ice cream type of thing.
Yeah.
And then my sister-in-law, when she was like a teenager, like she always made these Tutti Frutti ices, which is like orange juice and quite a bit of sugar. And, you know, like the raspberry Jello mix.
That sounds yum.
And so I buy like I'm really bad at like sizes. What is that plastic container? Like, is it a gallon?
Like, I don't 64 even know. Ounce? I don't know. I have a hard time
with the larger, you know, those disposable kosher ones.
I have a hard time remembering the sizes of those too.
The big one, big size. We whip it up. We think of them. It's like our memories. We only make this lemon ice cream and Tutti Frutti ices on Pesach. So it's like a Pesach food. Yeah. And it really lasts. You got that big tub of ice cream. That can serve you a number of meals.
Does it have eggs in it? Or?
So the lemon one does have some eggs.
Okay,
yeah.
So I'll take the Tutti Frutti recipe.
The Tutti Frutti. Yeah. Very nice. And it's not raw eggs, whatever. I know there's a debate about that.
No. Just because I have a kid with the egg allergy.
Oh, okay. Allergy.
Yeah. Nothing about health.
Yeah. But, you know, you really can like serve some of, you know, Miriam Pascal Cohen's Pesach cookie, chocolate chip cookies, which apparently are amazing.
I'm excited to
serve that with a scoop of sorbet or ice cream, and you're done. That's dessert.
Like, that's fantastic.
And so that's my hack. It just lasts for a bunch of meals, and we love it.
I love that hack. Well, you heard these hacks from us, but now we're going to bring on the professional. Mm-hmm. Here is our DMC with Miriam Pascal Cohen. We hope you enjoy it.
Hi, Miriam. We are so excited to have you on DMC. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Awesome. So please introduce yourself to our listeners and also tell us how you became known as the Overtime Cook. Love that name.
Okay. So my name is Miriam Cohen, but nobody knows that name. Everybody calls me Miriam Pascal. That's the funny thing about going from like a pretty uncommon name when you're single to like the most common name when you get married.
Right.
So I call Miriam Cohen my incognito name because nobody knows who I am when I say that. but anyway, so my name is Miriam Cohen, Miriam Pascal. I started out as overtime cook over 12 and a half years ago. I know because my niece was born like right around when I started and she had her bas mitzvah in the summer. So, it started as a food blog back in the days where like social media was so like new. Like I'm the bubby of this. I started this in 2011 when like there was like nothing. It was like I was reading non-kosher food blogs and I was like, oh, hey, I could do this. And so I started it. And at that point, I was working full time in office. It's actually the reason I started. It was like a dry, boring corporate job. I didn't hate it. I didn't love it, but I needed an outlet for creativity. And I was like, oh, I'm going to start a food blog. But it was a full-time job. If I remember correctly, it was 9 to 5:30 and then a commute each way. So, you know, nowadays in my old age, I'm like, I don't know how I ever thought that I had energy to do something in addition to that.
And don't we all look back like 12 years ago and we're like, how did we do that thing that we did?
Yeah, like if I had been the way I am now, I never would have started, but I was young and energetic. And I was like, okay, well, let's start a food blog in the very limited spare time. And so that was where the name Overtime Cook came from, because I was working full time and cooking overtime. Mm. You know, I started writing for magazines pretty quickly. And then I wrote my first cookbook in 2015. It came out in the fall of 2015. And then, you know, this is my fourth cookbook, which is crazy. I like to say it's the craziest thing I ever did is write 4 cookbooks in 9 years. Like, what was I thinking?
That's a lot.
Yeah, it is a lot. And I guess, you know, you mentioned that you were, before we started recording, you mentioned that you were reading my series, Mishpacha. So I think part of it is, of the reason I wanted to write this, is just to give people a taste. You know, when you look at that cookbook, it seems like such a small thing. Like, okay, whatever, it's a cookbook. Or maybe it seems like a big deal, but like, there's so, so much that goes into it that you, like, would never dream. Yeah, I did that 4 times.
It's incredible. It's really incredible to me.
So I have your Something Sweet cookbook.
Well, me too.
Okay.
Yeah. So I know you mainly for your baked goods. Do you do, and part of my ignorance, do you also do like other types of cooking?
Yeah. So my first cookbook, my first job writing for a magazine was desserts only. That's what they were looking for. And I was fine with that because I do love creating dessert recipes. And then when I wrote my first cookbook, it kind of felt natural. And actually, that's the reason I left that job, is because they were not looking for someone to do regular recipes. But I was just like, I wrote a whole cookbook of desserts. I've been writing dessert recipes for a bunch of years. Like, I'm kind of done with that. And I think what people at the time didn't know is that I think I'm known for 2 things separately, like dessert recipes, but then also for the family friendly, very approachable, real food. I don't like to call it healthy because I never call any recipes healthy anymore, because I learned a while ago that means something different to everybody. Mm-hmm. And some people get a little triggered by healthy used in the wrong way. You know, I like to use the word wholesome. Like, and that's really what I'm known for at this point, more than the desserts. And that's kind of what I stuck with throughout the Pesach cookbook, which just came out. Real Life Pesach Cooking is, you know, people ask me what makes this book different. And one of the things that, I don't want to say no other cookbook does this, but one of the things that I really feel strongly about is, specifically for Pesach, when they're not good quality, I don't use these, like, bottled sauces. I don't use imitation mustard, imitation soy sauce. Mm-hmm. There's not one bit of that in my cookbook.
Oh, good.
I don't like the quality, and so I don't use them. And like, there's, you know, 1 or 2 recipes that call for like barbecue sauce and ketchup, but I also give a homemade version because, again, like, I don't know that, firstly, that people use those on Pesach, like, if, depending on their menhagim, but also it just felt like the quality is not necessarily there, and I wanted it to be better quality. But in general, my style is that I don't, you know, you're not going to be pulling out 4 different bottled sauces to make a roast with me. Like, my roasts are, you know, I use produce, I use spices, I use like a little honey or maple syrup or whatever, but I try to keep the recipes on the healthy side, or at least, like I said, on the wholesome side.
I love that. Can I jump in real quick and just say, like, when we were talking about, when you mentioned that, like, everyone has a different idea of like what is healthy. So I want to just like take a moment to like pin down like what is wholesome. Like, wholesome to me, like, from what you're saying, it sounds like that it is more like less extra things that have like a whole bunch of extra ingredients, or like extra, the bottle that you're going to buy of some sauce that you're going to use 2 tablespoons of, and then it's going to sit in your pantry or in your refrigerator.
Right.
Like, you're avoiding that. And it's more like letting the food speak for itself.
I don't want to say that I never use those because people love a good shortcut also. But
accurate.
Yeah, to me, wholesome is like food that like you should feel good about feeding your family. I'm very into it. It's funny because, like, I don't know how tangential we should be here.
We love tangents.
But I talked about a year ago extensively on Instagram. I opened up my DMs for people talking about body shaming and weight, and I was very open about, you know, as much as I hate to be, it's very uncomfortable for me, but like that I've struggled with weight my whole life, and I've had a lot of judgment, especially in this industry, being overweight. And people are like, you know, I mean, I hate to even say this because, like, I don't want to give them the satisfaction, but hopefully they're not listening. Mm. Like, you know, every now and then I get someone saying like, oh, this is why you're fat. When I post something.
What is wrong with people? Why would anyone say wow.
But the thing is, like, actually the way I eat and the way I serve is very balanced. Like, every meal has a protein, a carb, and a vegetable. And like, when people are serving like mashed potatoes and schnitzel, mm-hmm. I'm not judging that. I just think to myself like, huh, like, I wouldn't serve that for supper. And
I'm feeling shame right now. Like,
No, there's nothing wrong with it. I just would add a salad. Like, I just, that's what I'm very into, is like balanced meals. Like, that's my thing. No, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to shame anyone for their supper.
I'm joking. We like to take any opportunity on DMC to make a joke and make fun of ourselves.
But it's just interesting that you get the fat shaming regardless of your lifestyle and the way you serve. But, you know, I try very hard with my recipes also. Like, you know, I don't pile the sugar onto meats and chickens. I don't see the, you know, but like now I feel like I'm talking about this too much and making myself sound like I'm like a healthy food person. I'm not. It's just regular food. And the thing I'm most proud of is like that people really say it's like family friendly and food that their family will eat. And I think that's part of the wholesome concept. You know, like, you can make a delicious, like, duck confit spring roll, and that's delicious, but if it's not family friendly, like, somehow it doesn't feel as wholesome.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Absolutely.
And yeah. I think also, like, I know I'm dating myself, but I'm thinking to, like, the 90s dishes of, like, the cranberry apple crumble. And, like, we all, you know, we still make them. But I think right. there was
I
time.
Don't, 'cause my husband doesn't like sweet pickles, okay, so I don't make it. Yeah.
I think there was
my husband doesn't either.
Yeah.
But I serve it as dessert.
Right. You could do that.
I should do that.
But also just like a certain consciousness of ingredients that I think that we in general are more aware that it's like, okay, a stick of margarine, a cup or two of sugar where you already have the apples and you already have the cranberry. And yes, you need some sugar to like cut the tartness, but do you need a cup or two of sugar? No. Like, I think we're just, does that mean that you're healthy? Well, we're more health conscious that like there's earth balance as an alternative. You know, there may be oil, you know, even canola oil is better, and like just cut sugar because it's not necessary so much. You know, you don't need to, like you said, put so much sugar on the chicken or meat or in the salad dressing, you know?
Right. So that's actually, by the way, I could go on for so long about salad dressing.
Right.
I happen to be a little bit of a salad dressing queen, but you just had such an alarmed look on your face.
No, it was excited. It was an excited look. Like, let's talk about salad dressing.
I was like, wait, am I stepping into some kind of territory that I shouldn't?
No, this is great.
Very, very open-minded. Yes.
Okay. That's good. Well, salad dressings really don't need such an open mind, to be honest. But, I am a little bit of a salad dressing queen. So the thing about salad dressings is I really, 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 like, I don't have a problem with, like, sugary meats and chickens because, like, I get it. Whatever. You like it. It makes sense. Salad dressing that calls for sugar in, like, percentage of a cup rather than, like, a teaspoon is really, like, my pet peeve. And I want to tell you something interesting. What's missing in salad dressings, the reason people are using so much sugar is they're not using enough salt. And I don't want to give health advice here because if your doctor told you to reduce your salt, whatever, you could do that. But the truth is, if you're making your salad dressing at home, it's going to have so much less salt than store-bought, even if you're putting a lot. But if you have a salad dressing recipe that doesn't call for salt at all, that's like, wait, why? Why are you not putting salt? Salt is the most important ingredient. And the interesting thing is that I often, more than any other type of food, get people saying to me, you know, I love the salad dressing at such and such restaurant, and I don't know, I never make anything that's anywhere near as good. And I was like, it's the salt. Are you putting enough salt in your dressing? And they're like, oh, I need to put salt in my dressing. And I'm like, you need to put salt in your dressing, of course.
So interesting.
Salt is what makes it taste good. And but like the third of a cup of sugar or whatever they're putting in is trying to do what the salt is doing, but it's not. Like, so my dressing will often call for like a tablespoon or two of honey or maple syrup.
Yeah.
I don't think I ever put sugar in dressing. I just don't understand why, because sugar is sweetness without flavor. When you're putting honey or maple, you're getting flavor.
I love that.
But
Oh, but I have a question though. What about like a mayonnaise base, like a Caesar dressing? I don't know. I feel like sugar is better. It doesn't have to be a lot, but would honey work in a mayonnaise Caesar base dressing?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah? So what I do with dressing actually is every now and then, homemade dressings actually last a really long time. I don't like to say exact amounts of time because I'm like scared of someone eating something that's like expired because of me, but they last a really long time. The only ingredient that you really have to watch out for is fresh garlic could go bad. So, when I'm making dressing that I plan to keep around, I'll use, garlic powder instead.
Right.
But, what I do every now and then is I pull out an immersion blender. And even the dressings that don't technically need an immersion blender, I still use it, and it just makes it very creamy and emulsified. And I just make like one after the other, rinse off the immersion blender, make another one, and then I'm like stocked for
like that.
A very long time. I'm not going to tell you how long.
I love
but,
this.
Long time.
I didn't even realize that we were going to be getting like salad dressing. This is amazing. I love this too.
Oh, yeah,
okay, but you're telling me I should sub.
I want to emulsify all my salad dressings.
You're telling me I should sub honey for sugar in my Caesar dressings. I want to just double check.
Yeah, that's for sure. Fine. That's okay, what I use honey. Maple syrup, if you're not using an immersion blender, maple syrup is a little more liquidy, so it will blend in better, but the flavor is more noticeable, so you might be better off with honey.
Okay, great tip.
I want to go back to when we were talking a little bit earlier about what we were talking about before we started recording about the writing that you're doing right now in Family First, the Mishpacha magazine, about like how you were developing the recipes and things for this cookbook. I would love to talk about your process of recipe development in general, and then how your recipes make it from your kitchen to your you know, either magazine or to the cookbooks. Like, walk us through this process, you know, a little bit. I know it's a long process, but you know.
so the recipe development process is. There's really one of two ways. Either I make a dish and I love it and I'm like, oh, I'm going to recreate that. Now, it's not like I recreate it from memory and publish it. Never, ever, ever. I wish I could show you, although, you know, the listeners wouldn't get to see anyway, but like a massive bin that I have of measuring cups and measuring spoons. Like so, so many, because every single thing gets measured for real before I put it into the recipe that I publish. So what happens is basically... And a recipe that I'm just like, oh, I have an idea. Let me go make it. I have this like huge tub of measuring cups, measuring spoons. And I just, as I go, I measure everything. And then immediately when I finish, I write down everything I put in. And then I make notes. Like I'll write the oven temperature and I'll write like however many minutes I set on the timer. And then I flip it. I'll write flip. And then you know, however many more minutes, and like really, really try to get all the details, but like very brief. And then what happens is once that's written, and I taste it and I like, if I like it, I'll write it up. Although I'll test it again, but I'll write it up while it's fresh in my mind. That's like the biggest thing. I would say the most frustrating thing for me is recipes that I have those basic notes, but I haven't written up properly, like quick enough. So I don't remember the details enough to write the recipe, and I have to go back and measure, like remake it so that I have the details fresh in my mind. And I actually have some really good recipes that I just one day I'll publish when I get to remake it and write it up. But so what writing it up really means is, and this is, I hope this doesn't sound egotistical. I wouldn't claim to be the best cook or the best food blogger, or the best kosher, whatever. Like, I don't make crazy claims like that because whatever, everybody's great. But one thing I really think I shine at, and I've heard this over the years so much where people say that my recipes really work, is that I actually work really, really hard on writing the recipes. Mm. And I try to put myself into the kitchen with you. So like, I'll say like, there's no need to wash the bowl before continuing. Hmm. And like, I get specific feedback on that. Like people are like, I appreciate that so much. Or, you know, when I say bake something for 15 to 18 minutes, if you don't say why it's 15 to 18 minutes, like, what does that do? What do I take it out after 15, after 18? Does it need even more? So I say until, you know, the taps feel set or until the color is starting to brown or, you know, I try to give you visual cues. And I mean, very early on, I happen to be a very big perfectionist. So very early on in doing this, you know, in writing recipes, before I was writing for magazine or cookbooks, just for my blog, which I still maintain and I still publish new recipes to, but just for that, I was like, I want to learn how to write recipes really well. So we're going back 12 plus years when I was like, let me research, how do you write recipes? And I did a ton of reading from like, you know, experts, cookbook editors, like different things to learn.
So interesting.
Like, you know, how to, like, just for example, everything should be in the right order. And if something has to cook longer than the other things, you do that first. And like, just these little things. And obviously over the years, I got so much better as I learned, but all these little details just make it that the recipe is more approachable, which I like to use. That's the one word I like to use to describe my recipes, is approachable. But, you know, when you feel like you're being told exactly what to do with things, it just makes it feel like, oh, I can do that. And also, there's, I don't want to criticize anyone, but in a lot of recipes, it'll say like salt and pepper to taste, for example. Mm-hmm. And I don't do that because it's okay, I guess, if it's like, you make a soup and then at the end of the soup, like add salt and pepper to taste. But like, if you're making chicken, like how do you salt and pepper to taste? What does that mean? You're not tasting raw chicken. But also more importantly, so I am known for talking about salt a lot, as you may have noticed from my salad dressing rant. What I find is that, you know, sometimes I have recipes that are very basic staple items. People tell me it's the best version of it they've ever had. And I wonder to myself, like, it's very basic. Why is it the best version? And I think because I'm giving you exact amounts, and I think a lot of people don't salt their food enough, for example. So when I'm giving you an exact amount of salt and you're putting it in, and it might be more than you would have used, but you're like, oh, wow, this is amazing. Of course it's amazing. Salt makes everything taste better. Salt is literally a flavor enhancer. So it makes everything taste better. It makes that you taste everything more. These are some of the things that I think about when I'm writing the recipe. And for the cookbook, the process is much more lengthy because once I write it, I sent it to my editor, Mrs. Femi Eisner. She's incredible. It's interesting because all my years of working in magazines, nobody ever did this. Nobody ever does this where like they send back like marked up documents for me to approve or not approve my changes. But I do that with her. She sends everything marked up and I approve or don't approve. And sometimes I don't want to say fight because she's great. And we, you know, but like we'll go back and forth and I'll try to explain why I did it one way. And she'll say, but this is why I find it not correct. And we'll go back and forth a few times. And then in general, even if everything's approved, she'll reread it again. And then sometimes she'll reread it a third or fourth time. And sometimes if she finds something, she'll send it back. And until we finally consider it final. And then like we put the recipe to bed until the whole manuscript is complete. And we have like the proofread, like a manuscript for proofreaders. And then that's another whole thing because the proofreaders, they find changes. And again, I approve or don't approve everything. Sometimes it's not necessarily a yes or no thing, but it's no, I don't necessarily agree with the change they're making.
Can you give us an example of like what are some changes that like they find?
Okay, so in terms of like grammar, I defer to them because it happens to be that I'm pretty okay with the grammar. My father actually is has a degree in linguistics. He's like a grammar. I'll give you an example. When we were kids, if you would say to my father, can I sleep by my friend's house tonight?
I knew you were going to say that
one. He would say, why won't they let you inside? he also, you know, he has like all these things that he's been saying. And so I'm pretty okay on the grammar front, but I do defer to the proofreaders who are more experts. But they're also there's at least one person who's going over the book, like someone who's an experienced cook who's going over the book. Her name is Judy Dick. She works for Art Scroll. She's an editor also. And sometimes she makes like grammar or whatever kind of things. But most of her comments on my book were questions about the recipe. And some, I wish I remembered, like some of the ones that she did that I was like, oh yeah, that's a really good point. But there were some that she wanted me to clarify. For example, every recipe in real life Pesach cooking and every recipe that I publish, I write plan ahead. I give you instructions for making it ahead of time. If you can freeze it, if you can keep it in the fridge for a while, if you should make some components ahead of time and some fresh, whatever it is, I try to give you those instructions. So like, let's say for roasts that I wrote, like plan ahead, I would write like, this can be frozen, rewarm, covered until heated through. That's like my standard line for a roast that you're putting in the freezer. And she kept saying like every page with instructions like that, she was like, be more specific, tell them what temperature, which I appreciate and I understand where she's coming from. And I actually spoke to her on the phone to make sure she understood why I wasn't accepting this change. But I said to her, specifically for Pesach, so I really wrote this cookbook thinking of Pesach and Yontif. So like, you know, I tried to think of recipes that you can make ahead of time for not only like for Friday night, but like for 2-3 days. I personally always leave a burner on for specifically side dishes. So I have a whole bunch of side dishes that you can make fresh nice. On Yontif if you keep a burner on. And so I told her, if I tell people, let's say, rewarm at 250 and their oven is set to 300 for Yontif, like, I don't want that to make people be like, oh, I can't do it. And so I much prefer if you just work with what you have. So if your oven's at 300, so you do that also until it's warm through, it will take less time. If it's 250, that's fine. If it's 220, that's fine. You just have to kind of figure out when it's warm through, but I don't want to be overly specific and make it so that people are like, wait, what do I do now? That's not the temperature I leave my oven at. So
makes sense.
So like that was a change that I didn't take, for example. You know, I would say that, so the cookbook had, in addition to the editor, had three different proofreaders. Ooh. And each one kind of had a different thing that they look at. So one of them, Shana Halpert, she's great. Rifki, you might know her from Mishpacha.
No, I don't.
So she's great. So she was looking at it really from like a grammatical perspective and like if anything looked like it was aligned wrong, which I was amazed. Like she would find like an extra space in between words. And I was like, how do you see that? and then my friend Brachaleah Biller, who's incredible, she kind of goes through in her head like as if she's cooking. So she asks, I mean, she's a really good cook and she's pretty experienced at this point, but she asks the questions like, what size should this be? Or how do I know if this is done? Or, and then Mrs. Dick, she was also looking from a cooking perspective, but like kind of from like, you know, she's like a bubby who's been making huge amounts of Pesach food for a million years. So she's looking from that point of view. So, you know, it was great feedback. And so, but I had to go through each of their things. So the amount of times I went through every single recipe was intense. Mm. And then of course, when I got the manuscript, that honestly is like the hardest part for me. Firstly, it's boring. I love the creative part of this. I didn't sign up for the like boring edits and stuff like that. Like that's, I'm like, I don't want to do this,
yeah.
But I do because I'm a perfectionist, like I said. So what winds up happening is that, I put like crazy pressure on myself to read like every single word to see if there's anything. Sometimes the editor will make a change that I didn't notice at the time, and I'll read it and I'll be like, that does not sound like me. Or sometimes I wrote it, but it just, maybe I was in a weird mood or mm-hmm. I was tired and I wrote something that just doesn't sound like my words. So there's a bunch of things that I changed like that. There's also some things specifically for this book that I think nobody else could have caught. I'll give you an example just because it was Pesach ingredients and Pesach is so different. And I'm the one who's been using it for 4 years. So there's one recipe in the book that calls for margarine. I really don't use margarine if I can avoid it, but I tried this recipe without, and it's so good that I was like, all right, whoever's going to decide to use margarine, we'll just enjoy it. It's a snowball cookie recipe. And so I have standard wording that I write in recipes, which gives like a consistency feel to books and things. So one of the standard wording that I write for margarine, if a recipe calls for 2 sticks of margarine, which is like a cookie recipe often will, although I use very, very little margarine nowadays. Like my most famous recipe is my no margarine chocolate chip cookies.
Yeah, we love that one.
So I really don't use a lot of margarine, but like when I do, the standard wording is 1 cup and then in parentheses 2 sticks of margarine. And like at a very late stage in the game, I was reading that recipe and I was like, oh wait, Pesach margarine does not come in sticks. It comes in one block.
Right, one giant, really annoying to measure out block. Why did they do that to us?
I don't know. So I was like, oh wow, like that's a big mistake, because two sticks, that's not a thing in Pesach margarine. So I changed it to half of the block. You know, that's just an example of like the kind of thing that only I would have found. So, you know, I went through the whole thing.
And I love that you like thought about that detail, because like for me at this point, you know, I've been cooking for how many years? So like, I know, I'm like, okay, so fine, it's half the block, you know, but for someone who's new to it, and for someone who is maybe not as familiar and it's not as routine, like that person's not going to necessarily know that it's half the block. Mm-hmm. So I love that you, like, I love that perfectionistic tendency to like really make it accurate. Mm-hmm. I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. I try so, so hard. But then the interesting thing, I think that as a perfectionist, this is like impossible for me, but there comes a point when you say like, okay, I read it enough. We read it enough. We worked really hard. If there's a mistake, hopefully it's like a minor grammatical error and not like a recipe, a mistake with the recipes. We didn't talk about this at all, but I have like recipe testers who make the recipes as written. So if there's something wrong, it will have been caught. But like, you know, when you're getting close to the print date and like there's like a part of me that wants to be like, okay, I'm just going to keep reading this like nonstop. I'm not going to sleep. I'm just going to keep reading this every spare minute. And I do. But at some point they step back and I'm like, it looks really good. And we're human. So maybe there's a tiny little grammatical error, something that's like the wrong font size or something. But like, you could drive yourself crazy trying to find every last mistake. And it's a big deal because you're printing a lot of copies. And I actually, one of the reasons I'm so precise with my recipe writing, I'll never forget the first time I published the roast recipe. I was like, oh my God, what if I wrote it wrong? And people are going to buy an expensive piece of meat.
That's a good point.
And it's going to flop and it's going to be my fault. And I'll never forget that feeling. I was like, whoa, like this is a real pressure that I have. That like, if you're going to follow my recipe and trust me, it has to come out good. And so I still keep that in mind when I write recipes, because, you know, obviously if you're buying a cowboy steak, that's very expensive. But even if you're buying something less expensive, especially on Pesach when all ingredients are expensive and there's not enough time to mess anything up, like I feel a real pressure to like get it right. And that kind of like guides me when I'm measuring everything precisely and I'm rewriting and I'm making sure everything is very, very accurate, because it's just like, oh yeah, like it's on me if I mess up.
So, I really appreciate that about the added pressure of Pesach. I remember last year, to cut a long story short, the butternut squash muffins. Okay, so we've got the butternut squash frozen cubes that cost a fortune, kosher le Pesach, right? And then all the ingredients and all the time, and it went into, I don't want to say what, but it got chafed up, okay? Like, could not be eaten on Pesach.
No.
And I threw it, I was really upset. Because, like, when you think about the time, and the time, you don't have a lot of time preparing, and then the expense of these ingredients, I was like, okay, you gotta chill. Like, you can't, like, but it's true. There are all these additional factors when it comes to Pesach. Makes it a little bit more emotional experience.
Speaking of expensive Pesach ingredients, I'll give you a little tip. People think it was like really hard for me to get Pesach ingredients year round. And there's some that I had to stock up on, like margarine, and ladyfingers. But there's actually so many ingredients are actually kosher for Pesach year round.
Right.
And so my little tip is, I don't know when this episode will be released, if it's too late, but if not, you two can just take the tip yourselves. But if you look in the regular chametz aisles, there are so many ingredients that say kosher for Pesach that you don't have to wait until they're,
prices go
you know,
up
in the Pesach aisle and really expensive. Things like
cocoa not powder.
Not vinegars, but a lot of vinegar.
Yeah.
Cocoa powder is a good one. Chocolate chips are very different year-round because they have a stabilizer called soy lecithin, which is kidneys. But there are some chips. I'm going to give a shout-out to Lieber's, who is a client of mine, but just because I love them. I love these chips. They're 72% like dark chocolate, which I love. I basically use them instead of regular chocolate chips. And they actually have no soy, which means that year-round they're kosher Pesach. Mm. So you can go buy them like today. Trying to think what other, like a lot of spices. Not all. You have to check. Yeah. But a lot of spices, if you look at it, it will say kosher Pesach. And you don't have to wait until the really expensive stuff comes out.
Mm-hmm. That's a great tip.
That's my little tip.
A shout out to the OU Pesach magazine that will have lists of what, you know, what you can buy year round.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
Right. I know my mother-in-law who lives in LA really like, and they don't have the same level of Pesach shopping that we do on the East Coast. Like she really relies on that because it's hard to find everything. Mm-hmm.
Makes sense. Yeah.
No, for sure.
Okay, so we are so excited to keep talking with you all about your new cookbook, Real Life Pesach Cooking. But first, we're going to take a quick break to tell you more about our episode sponsors. If you are looking for a new home appliance, Town Appliance is the obvious choice. Appliances are a big purchase. Yes. And you want to get it right the first time. No, like, can you imagine like getting something and then regretting it? No one wants that. With the right customer service addressing all our needs is from shoppers, Town Appliance helps you get it right the first time.
Town Appliance also offers a price match guarantee. Do you know what this means? They will match any price of an authorized dealer.
Ooh.
Like Home Depot, Lowe's. You just call them and be like, I saw this oven for this price. That oven that I'm now going to buy.
From Town Appliance.
For my Pesach. Kitchen, right? I mean, I'm not, but like if I were to, like I'm going to make a Pesach kitchen, just Town Appliance. But yeah, price match guarantee is like a really amazing offer. So please check out our show notes for the link and contact information, and you can get started on your new appliance shopping today with Town Appliance. Our episode sponsors that we are offering a coupon code for DMC listeners. So thank you, we. You want to use DMC free 24 for a free accessory. If you're in the market for a swing set, look no further. We is the brand you want and the company you want to work with.
You want to work with a customer service team that's going to consider everything when you're buying a swing set. Size and layout of your yard, features, ages of your kids, style. Their playgrounds are made with top-of-the-line vinyl and other materials and are customized to the needs and wants of your family.
We ships around the country, including Canada, and you'll find their contact information as well as website link and that coupon code in our show notes. Remember, we plus you equals lasting fun.
So let's talk a little bit more about Appaman. You know, when you're browsing through a website and you're looking for clothes to your kids, like one of the main things that I'm looking for is style plus comfort. And you can just tell whether it's like the print or the cut. You can tell when something looks like it's going to deliver. Appaman has a beautiful collection of stylish, trend-setting, and quality clothing.
Yeah, it needs to hit all of those pieces. And don't forget, by the way, about their shipping and return policy. Appaman has a 30-day return policy, which means technically you could like order something before Pesach and then not have to worry about it until Pesach has passed to return it.
That
if it didn't
nice.
Work.
That is nice.
Yeah, shipping is also free for U.S. orders over $50.
So thanks to our friends at Appaman, we have a coupon code for you, 20% off for DMC listeners. The code you want to use is DMC20 at checkout, excluding the core collection, and we will include that as well as their website link in our show notes.
Okay, we're back. Really excited about your new cookbook, Real Life Pesach Cooking. Tell us all about it. Also, Miriam, we haven't talked about photography. So tell us about...
True.
Yeah, like, I know that you do a lot of your photography. Tell us about the new book.
Okay, so I do all my own photography.
That's amazing. That's so cool.
Which actually, like, being a control freak like I am is really helpful.
You're like speaking to me on a neshama level.
Why
do you think we edit the podcast? Why do you think I edit the podcast myself? Like, you know what I mean?
Okay, so are you a perfectionist control freak?
Very much, yes. Yeah.
Okay. Wow. Okay.
It's like open admissions therapy and DMC.
I love DMCs. Okay.
All right. Anyways, photography.
Oh, I mean, I can keep going. I'm also like wildly irresponsible.
No, that doesn't speak to me as much, but
okay. You know, my line when my husband asked me like why, well, this actually ties right into photography, like why did I do this or why didn't I do that? I'm always like, I'm just a baby.
You're just a baby.
I'm irresponsible, whatever. It is what it is. I don't know how to do adult things. I just know how to write cookbooks and make good food. But with my cookbook, that really ties right into it, because like one time we came home, we were away for Shabbos, and we came home and there were like 15 boxes on our front steps, and my husband was like, Miriam, what's that? I was like, I'm just a baby. But
I accidentally pressed purchase on my phone. Add to cart. Yep.
The truth is that writing a cookbook and photographing a cookbook requires so many dishes. I use dishes from book to book for sure. I have my collection. I mean, the oldest pieces of my collection are going back all the way to the beginning, although I probably should start getting rid of them because I think they're kind of out of style by now.
Oh, no. But
I have tons and tons of my collection from previous books, but this book was different because I used a lot of platters because it just felt like yontif, and I cannot tell you how hard I was like searching constantly. Every store I could think of, I was on Amazon looking for platters, and I was on CB2 and West Elm, and I was just like looking for platters like everywhere. And every time I thought I was done, I was like, oh wait, I have this dish and that dish, and you know, run to Home Goods, see if I can find some nice platters. But I mean, you know, that's just one part of it, but like just so much, plates and cutlery and little bowls for like adding, you know, for like the salad dressing or whatever. And there's just so much. It's like kind of endless.
I mean, food photography is such an art. And then there's the styling. My mother actually did that professionally, in the non-Jewish world. And she once did a cookbook. She did, photo shoots and commercials, but she did wardrobe and set design, but she did one cookbook, and like it's a whole thing. So like tell me about like food photography. Were you trained in that? Like how do you, or no, it was just trial and error?
So remember I said when I started I was like, let me learn how to write recipes really well. Mm-hmm. I was also like, let me learn how to take pictures, because this was just for my blog. It was my hobby. It wasn't something I was ever going to spend money at the time. I never like imagined that it would like be a job. But I wasn't going to spend money like hiring a photographer. So I was like, okay, I'm going to take my own pictures. I'm going to learn how to do it. And so I read everything I could. I was actually at the time working with some photographers in my day job. So I asked them for, you know, all the help I could. And I really, really just pushed myself to learn. And, you know, if you go back to my blog and you go back to 2011, you can see how bad it was in the beginning. Like, it wasn't like instant. Mm. And even through my books that I photographed my four books, plus Naomi Nachman's two cookbooks, Perfect for Pesach and Perfect Flavors. So, you know, six books. You can see from the beginning, I happen to think the pictures in my earlier books are great, but like you can definitely see a change in my style and in my skills and, you know, with lighting and things like that. It was just a learning process, like both the styling and the photography. It was like, all right, if I'm going to do this, I'm going to learn to do it right.
Yeah, I love that, like that can-do attitude. there are, so you had mentioned earlier about how, you know, there's a lot of Pesach cookbooks on the market. And one thing that's different about your cookbook is that you are not using so many necessarily of the sauces or those like, you know, the fake, quote unquote, fake ingredients. And can you tell us a little bit more about like what makes your cookbook unique in the Pesach cookbook? You know, I don't actually even own, yours is going to be the first Pesach cookbook I own. Actually, I do not even own any. Yeah.
Okay. So there's some great Pesach cookbooks that came before mine. Like I said, I photographed Naomi Nachman's Perfect for Pesach and it was fantastic. The thing I think that I would say differentiates mine a lot is that I grew up with a very restrictive Pesach Minhagim. My parents don't use products. I mean, they use the basic ones. They don't use spices. Mm-hmm. And then when I got married, my in-laws use pretty much all of it.
Wow.
So So yeah, plus they eat kebrux. My parents don't eat kebrux, so it was, you know, quite the upgrade.
It's better that you went that direction than the other opposite direction. You know, can you imagine going from eating everything to eating nothing? Yeah. That'd be hard.
Yeah. Well, I know people who've done that, and it's significantly less fun. I think it gave me a very good perspective on the range of Pesach Menhagim, and it was so important to me that even if you have very restrictive Pesach Menhagim, you'll find recipes to make in my book. Mm. So, but there's a very interesting opposite point. So sometimes there's like when you're creating Pesach recipes and you're talking about Pesach recipes amongst recipe developers, there's like a push to be like, I'm going to make everything no product so that everyone could use it, mm-hmm. which not only is it hard, but there's an interesting counterpoint, which is that people who do use products find that very frustrating. It's like, mm-hmm. I don't need to do everything from scratch. Mm-hmm. I can make certain things. I can use certain shortcuts. And so I tried really hard to have something for both sides. So, you know, there's definitely a handful of recipes that are like really, really basic. Like even Chabad can, I don't know, you know, I know different people in Chabad have different levels of restrictions. So maybe like the most stringent would have trouble. But like I heard from people who have Chabad Pesach Menhagim, which are very restrictive, who got the book and they were like, wow, I can't believe there was really a bunch of things for me to make.
Nice.
But at the same time, I also wanted to think about those people who could go to the store and buy spices. So like let them be able to do something quicker by using spices rather than have to grind up fresh ginger and shallots and whatever the way you would if you can't use spices. So I think, oh, Rivki, are you also an overthinker? Because I am.
Yeah.
I'm an overthinker. Oh, yeah. I'll admit also, that. Okay.
We're all in that camp.
I think being an overthinker is like a blessing and a curse, but really like overthink my cookbooks. But I mean specifically within the concept of writing a cookbook, because I overthink everything so much, like you can't even imagine. But one of the things that I really like thought and overthought, if we're being honest, about is like I really tried to think of everybody and think what recipes are they going to want to make. So, you know, whether it was with their menhagim, like I was like, I want to make sure I have for every level of Pesach menhagim. It was also like with just recipes that like, I'll give you an example. Growing up, you know, we didn't use products. We did drink seltzer. And I don't know if I'm going to get my parents into trouble for saying this, but the substitute for soda that we had, we called it wine soda, but like the really sweet, like cream red, whatever, in seltzer. And that like, you know, that's what me and my siblings drank because we didn't have soda. I really, really like always, even now, like on Pesach, one of the things I miss most is like my Diet Peach Snapple, which I'm not saying is healthy, but that's just what I love and what I drink all the time. And not having good drinks is always like a struggle for me. Like, I know there's much bigger problems to think about, but like I'm into good drinks. And so I have two really, really amazing drink recipes because I don't want you to feel lacking in any area, even if it's drinks.
Oh, I'm excited
that's
about that.
That's really like creative. I would never even think about drink recipes. Yeah, that's
thank
great.
You. I also was like, did you guys grow up with cheese snacks?
Yeah, those are the little cheesecakes.
Yeah, right?
Yeah.
So when my mother would like the minute the kitchen was turned over for Pesach, she'd like pull out the cheese snacks, and that was like. It's such a good memory, but also like, again, this goes back to like healthy, wholesome, like, I don't want to say it's not healthy because it's not terrible for kids, but I was like, you know, what if we add cottage cheese and make it like full of protein so you can give that to your kids and it's like breakfast or lunch.
Love that. And also they're like and expensive to buy them individually. Right, so like, right. That's great to make it.
So I have a recipe for homemade cheese snacks, love but that. I snuck in cottage cheese. I want to tell you, many kids have had it and if you don't tell them, they won't know unless they listen to the podcast or we can Facebook. But they are, you know, I just was like, oh, let's put protein in that because how many times on Pesach do you need like something like on the go that your kids can eat and be like full and not kvetchy? You know, my mother always said, I think from her mother, her grandmother, hungry children are cranky children.
Yeah.
And, true. So I was like, I know, I mean, I don't have kids yet, but I know that from my childhood and from all my friends and family with their kids, like, it's such a challenge. You're out on Chol-Moed and your kids are like cranky and they don't like, you know, you can't just go buy pizza. Like, it's so hard. And I was like, yeah, let's have an option that you could give them that they'll enjoy, but you'll be like, oh, score, I'm giving my kid like an actual meal here because there's protein in it. Which also, by the way, leads me to another really cool feature that I put in this book, which is my Chol-Moed travel food guide. So both for day trips.
I love that.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
I'm already envisioning like freezing those little cheese snacks, right? And then like then you can put them in the cooler and let them defrost. And then by the time it's like perfect.
Yeah. So I mean, I basically wrote like a guide for both like day trips if you're just going out for the day, and for overnight stays, like how to prepare the food in the hotel room. Like I give you like the basics of what I pack with me. And like recipe ideas to make like in your Betty Crocker, which is what I use when I'm in a hotel room.
A paste is like Betty Crocker. And, you're an advocate. That's a good idea.
Oh yeah, because you know what? I don't do a lot of milkshakes on Pesach.
Uh-huh.
Maybe I'll switch because my favorite milkshake recipe I ever created was my French onion cauliflower bake that's in Real Life Pesach Cooking. It's insane. So that maybe I'll actually have to make milkshakes on Pesach just so I can make that. But I actually don't do milkshakes other than in my Betty Crocker. Even when I'm not traveling, that's my milkshake oven, frying pan, whatever, amazing, that I use for Pesach. So I am very, very much an advocate for having a Pesach Betty Crocker.
So cool.
That's a really good idea.
Especially if you don't have a big kitchen or, you know, and you don't have, like, another oven or...
I just realized also it's brilliant for when you've turned your kitchen over. Right?
What do you mean?
I'm sorry. Before you've... Hold on. Well, I'm all confused. No, no, I'm so saying
if you
once
have
you've...
a Betty Crocker for a year round, then So what my parents always did, which... I think is smart. I don't know how many, like, if this is common that everybody does it, but they leave like the dining room chametz stick till like right before digas chametz. So yeah, in the dining room we'll pull out the Betty Crocker and we'll make things.
That's a really good idea.
You know, because we're like coffee addicts in my house, so I put like the coffee machine in there and
the toaster,
and, you know. Yeah. Right. But so the Betty Crocker is great because you can make so much on it,
so
which is another whole conversation. You'll have to have me back so we can.
Betty Crocker will sponsor the episode. Give us all free extra.
That's great. You know, I finally just got one for the first time like a couple months ago.
Yeah, it's, like, love it.
Yeah, it's amazing. I'm obsessed.
Okay, Betty Crocker, are you listening? Okay. Let's talk about your favorite recipe, your favorite Pesach recipe in your new cookbook and why.
Okay. So firstly, I'll just say that it's kind of like if I ask you what who your favorite child is.
I know. We get this on the podcast.
I know, and
all
we're always
the time.
Asking people about what their favorite things. Maybe we should think of a new question.
One of your favorites.
There you go.
Okay.
How about this? I'm going to even give you the option of doing a dessert favorite recipe and a
main
regular. Yeah, like a main or a side dish, whatever.
Okay.
Sweet and savory.
I'll start with the dessert one because I worked crazy hard on this recipe and I'm so proud of it. My ultimate Pesach chocolate chip cookies.
Oh, well, I love your chocolate chip cookies anyway. That's one of the recipes that we make all the time, regular ones.
I actually was like, I'm so famous for my Pesach chocolate chip cookies. Mm. I need to make sure, I mean, for my year-round chocolate chip cookies. But if I'm writing a Pesach cookbook, I need to have like the ultimate Pesach chocolate chip cookies. And I put a lot of pressure on myself with this. And I actually worked really hard. I tried a lot of different things. And at some point, I'm not going to go into the whole long story, but at some point I had a recipe that was like written up. I sent it to my editor already. I was like, done. And then I went back and made it and I was like, it's good, but it's not great.
Oh.
And I scrapped it. I was like, no, this is not good enough.
Wow.
And I went back to the drawing board and I made actually very quickly the version that ended up in the cookbook. But then, because again, it had to be the ultimate, I tried it a few different ways. I tried it, different little things to see if it would be as good. I really worked crazy hard, but I will say that the end result is insane. Like,
oh, I'm so excited.
You could eat it and not think that it's a Pesach cookie. It's like the flavor is there, the texture is there. It's just so good. I'm so proud of it. So I guess that would have to be the favorite. Although really, I have a coffee cookie brittle recipe that is insane. Ooh. And that one also, I took a million tries because I made it the first time like by mistake. And I was like, I was trying for something else and I made it and it was so good. But I didn't know what I did, and I was trying to recreate it, and I kept getting it wrong, and I wouldn't give up because I had already made it amazing. So I kept going and going, and it is so good. So, you know, that's another favorite. In terms of real food, it's hard because there's so many. I'll tell you my husband's, one of my husband's favorites, maybe his favorite. There's a roast in the book. It's a dried fruit and shallot braised roast.
Ooh.
So it uses the fruit for all the sweetness. There's no added sweetness, if I remember correctly. And it's just this really incredible, it's like soft and tender, and there's like savoriness from the shallot and sweetness from the fruit.
Nice.
And it's just like so, so good. And that one I would say is my husband's favorite. My favorite? Oh man, I don't know.
If, Miriam, even if you could see it, like, is there one that's going to be like the hit? Like you think your audience is going
to
love?
It's so hard to predict that though.
Yeah.
If I knew how to predict that better, I would only write hits. I'll tell you another favorite. So my secret sauce recipe, which is like a dip / salad dressing / like put it on everything and make everything taste better. That was the concept that I came up with. I was like, I want to have something that you could like dip, you know, if you eat kebabs, you could use as a dip for matzah. You could dip your chicken and you can dress a salad with it, and like everything you put it on will just be like so much better because it's so flavorful. And again, this took a lot of iterations. At first I was trying for like a Pesach ranch, but it wasn't coming out the way I hoped. And I was like, and I went back to the drawing board, and I basically like threw everything I could think of that was like tons of flavor into the sauce. And it's amazing. And I've already been getting feedback.
Nice.
It's hard because, you know, at this point the book's out for two weeks, a week and a half. And usually at this point I have tons of feedback from people making it, and the feedback, because it's a Pesach book and most people are just putting it aside until they start Pesach cooking, which is a while still. The feedback has really been like really just trickling in. But I did have a few people who tasted it and were just like, wow, which makes me happy because it's like the idea of it is that it's like a supporting character that will just like elevate any dish. And I hope it will be really popular. I hope maybe people listening to the podcast will be like, all right, I'm going to make that one.
I'm definitely going to check it out.
Same. It's incredible. I'm trying to think what other.
Miriam, do you make your own mayo? Or like, do you have a recipe for mayo?
So there is a recipe in the book for mayo.
Excellent.
I will buy mayo on Pesach sometimes, but
that's one ingredient that like I run out of, like I use a lot of, and I think I really would like to try making my own.
I've heard it's so much
it's actually
too.
Really, really easy.
So much better.
Yeah.
As long as you have an immersion blender, it's super easy.
For sure.
So
it's a must.
There's a recipe in Real Life Pesach Cooking. I borrowed an idea from Japanese mayo, which is where they use egg yolks instead of whole eggs. So if I remember correctly, I use some and some, but extra egg yolks makes it extra creamy.
Ooh.
So that was like my little trick that I did. But there is homemade mayo. There's also homemade barbecue sauce, homemade ketchup.
Oh gosh.
I also tell you how to make. I use Pesach crumbs a bunch, and you could buy Pesach crumbs, but if you don't, I give you there's a recipe to make your own Pesach crumbs.
Cool.
There's homemade crackers.
I'm getting excited about which Pesach from this
like,
interview.
I know. That's, by the way, that's the feedback I've been getting. That's like been the most meaningful to me is people saying like, I'm actually excited to cook for Pesach, which is not something you hear so often. So it means so much to me when people say that.
Yeah.
I really put my heart and soul into the book, and I hope that it comes through when people are reading the book and cooking from the book that like they feel that like heart and soul and obsession that I put
so
into the book to make it like really just I was going to say staple, but it's not a staple. To be like a
go-to.
That's the word I'm looking for.
It's like a go-to, no?
like yeah. your cookbook.
Yeah, just... there's a word that I'm trying to think of that I'll remember as soon as we stop recording. Yes.
Isn't that always how it works?
But
yeah, what were you going to say?
No, just I really, really tried to make it a book that's not just like, oh, here's a whole bunch of Pesach recipes, but like, here's everything you need for the week of Pesach. So I hope that comes through, and I hope people will find themselves, you know, really, Pesach should be easier for you when you have the book.
And it's really evident by the name, Real Pesach Cooking. Yeah, like, that's just such a brilliant way to brand this. Like,
this is real life.
Exactly, exactly. Miriam, this is we're just, I'm enjoying this DMC so much, and I'm sad that it's getting to that point where we're coming to a close. But before we go, can you share with us and our listeners some of your most helpful tips for Pesach menu planning and cooking?
Yeah, so my general method for making yontif, which applies to any yontif, but Pesach especially, is to figure out everything I could freeze and make that first. Hmm. Now, Pesach, if you don't have a Pesach kitchen, you don't have as much time, but I'll give you the concept and then you can kind of work with that. But so make everything that could freeze. But then here's the real trick that I do is I break things down into tasks. And what I mean is, remember we said salad dressings last for a while? So if you're making a salad, fresh and yontif even, make the salad dressing right like the week before. Hmm. You have time. You can just have it done, cross it off your list. It's one less thing to think about. And so for every recipe I make, whatever it is, I try to break it down into components and then think about when I could do it. So for example, if I'm making roasted vegetables, I'm a big believer that has to be done like last minute. So I'll be doing that, you know, if yontif is, let's say, for example, yontif is Tuesday night, like I'm roasting it on Tuesday.
Right.
Oh, Monday night. Okay, so I'm my vegetables are being roasted on Monday. But you don't have to cut them on Monday. You could cut them on Sunday. You don't have to, you know, measure out the stuff that's going on them on Monday. You can do that the day before and put it in a little container in your fridge. Like, you can break down tasks into components and do whatever components can be done ahead of time when you have time. And also, like, you know, if you find yourself with 10 minutes, you know, you're about to go to work, but you have 10 minutes, like, do something quick, like make a salad dressing or I'm blanking out now on other things you could do quickly, but like when you go through your menu, like if there's components, and in my book, the components are divided up, like they're separate. So you don't have to make them all at the same time, make them. And in my plan ahead instructions, also I'll say like, make this 2 days ahead, make this a week ahead, and make this fresh. So that's my biggest tip for cooking for yontif in general, but for sure for Pesach, is just like, you know, make a comprehensive list, not of the recipes you're making, but of all the components, and just assign the ones that can be made ahead of time. So, you know, you make those ahead of time and like, it just takes things off your head. Mm-hmm. The only other thing I could say is, maybe because I'm irresponsible, is like lists and lists and lists. Yeah. So like I'll make like a list, like a shopping list for Erev Yontif and a shopping list for the week before Yontif. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like I'll make different lists of like what I need and things like that, and make lists again of not just the recipes, but all the components. Mm-hmm. Also, you know, you got to make sure to cross everything off, because there's no better feeling than crossing. Like if I made something and forgot to put it on the list, I'll add it to the list just so I can cross it off.
Love that.
That amazing. Is the best feeling.
We got to trick ourselves.
We got to celebrate the wins, right?
I love that. Miriam, thank you so much. I first of all, I just love the behind the scenes that you've shared with us about your cooking styles, about your triumphs and failures, and certainly all these tips, and so much for us, I think, really to give us a sense of anticipation and excitement and freshness and newness. We need a new cookbook every year,
Thank you so much.
We're looking for your next one. Where can our listeners purchase your new cookbook?
So any Jewish bookstore in America, and in Europe they have it very, very soon in Israel. By the time this is released, I hope will be in Israel. But you can also order it on Amazon or on artscroll.com. It should be pretty easy to get.
Amazing.
Fantastic.
Well, thank you for joining us.
And by the way, I have like big plans for it to sell out. So get it before it sells out.
Okay. That's right. Stop around. Don't wait.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you. Oh, that was such a fun DMC. I just love Miriam's candidness and her constant smile and just her fun, relaxed demeanor, you know? I love the idea of wholesome cooking that is real and people like it. I also love how much she loves salt, like the ode to salt. Like that was a nice part of the conversation. Mm-hmm. It's true, salt is important, and I don't often use it enough. Mm-hmm. And I like how she used that like perfectionistic tendency of hers to really like achieve so many amazing things. And she uses it in such a thoughtful way, like wanting to make it easier for the people who are using her recipes. And that sense of achrayus that she has, that she wants to make sure if someone is using her recipe, like she wants to make sure that it really hits and that it's not a flop. There is, you know, there's nothing worse than like making a recipe, not Miriam's. Any other, like I've failed recipes before and they haven't come out good. Yeah. And I'm like, oh, what is this?
I've actually noticed that. It was interesting hearing it from her because I've noticed that in her recipes. I keep talking about her chocolate chip cookies. But her like introduction, you know how cookbook authors will write about like a little bit of the background to the recipe. And this recipe includes cornstarch. And she like really makes effort to explain like why she selected that ingredient and why it makes a difference. And like you really feel like you're making something that's been, you know, thought out and tested, and she has definitely made that name for herself. You can see it.
I love it.
A couple things that I thought was interesting and insightful, like how she started her food blog as an outlet for creativity. She already had this like, you know, pretty long day job where she was busy. And again, a theme that we have in so many of the people that we interview, it's like she didn't start out to be a big cookbook blogger, you know, a kosher cooking blogger. It just sort of happened. And she carved out time from this busy schedule. It wasn't like, I have to quit my job to start this new endeavor. No, I want to do this. It's an outlet for me. I'm going to squeeze it in. I'm going to make the time and look how it evolved.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah, I think it's a good message. Just to remind ourselves about, like, I think where that perfectionistic tendency sometimes comes in is where we think that we have to do it all grand and right and properly from the beginning. But, like, no, not necessarily.
Yeah, and like and she's talking about when you look at her, the evolution of her, like, photography and things like that, when you can see the process, you know, like the learning on the job. It's okay. It's okay to do that, you know?
Yes.
Like, you can think about like listening to our early episodes. Maybe don't go listen to them, but like I'm just saying, like,
yeah, for sure,
it's definitely anything is an evolution. You know, you just grow as you go.
For sure, and I also like about herself, about Miriam, is that like she's humble, yet she also very much owns it. She owns her strengths. She talked about like the areas that she shines, that the areas like writing her recipes well, the precision that she puts into her cooking, which we've talked about. She talks about like her coffee cookie brittle and her Pesach chocolate cookies that she describes as like they're insane. And it's not like she's like bragging. She's like, this is where I know I can contribute and where I know I like that language that she used, where I know I can shine. And and just that sense of like being proud of that and owning it. And that's great.
Good yeah, for you, I agree. That's fantastic. Here is this episode's takeaway. Think about your favorite tip that Miriam shared with us today. Now, write it down on a Post-it note and put it in your Pesach notebook or your Google Doc, better yet, in your new real-life Pesach cooking cookbook so you can refer to it this Pesach. Don't forget to think of Miriam as your Pesach cooking just got way easier. One last thank you to Town Appliance for being our podcast sponsor. You don't need to think too hard or make things more complicated for yourself when you are looking for a new home appliance. Maybe your oven just broke. We've all been there. I've been there twice in 10 years. It wasn't fun. Or if you're renovating your entire kitchen, like whatever the reason that you need a new appliance, the obvious choice for any of your appliance needs is Town Appliance.
And why support a big box store when you can support a Jewish company and also benefit from their 40-plus years of customer service designed for the religious customer? It's a win-win. Town Appliance is truly the obvious choice, so check out our show notes for their contact information.
One last shout-out to our episode sponsor, We by SR Play. We playground structures of the highest quality and safety standards, and their customer service provides expert planning, working carefully with your space. Not someone else's yard, your yard. They ship across North America and even make yard calls in New York and New Jersey. With We, you can plan every detail of your place. Said like what do you want, swings, do you want a glider, what do you want? They have so many options. The experience is truly customized. They'll help you design a play structure based on your preference and budget. Please check out our show notes for the link and contact information.
Finally, go check out appaman.com for an adorable collection of clothes for your boys and girls. It's not too late for Pesach. Shipping's free for orders over $50.
If you got boys, don't forget to take a look at their boys' core collection, which features those classics you need for Yontif shopping, the belts, dress shirts, suits, etc., all in one place. We know both you and your kids will be comfortable and stylish all season long. And don't forget about the coupon code that we will have in our show notes. Our next episode is after Pesach, and who better to DMC with than Anat Ishai, known as the Challah Mom on social media. She is a proud dancing challah queen, and she recently made Aliyah, so we can't wait to schmooze with her about all things challah and living the dream in Eretz Israel.
If you're a fan of DMC, please consider donating to support the work we do. We've added a way for listeners to make a small monthly donation, so please check out our show notes for details as well as info about our new WhatsApp group. Thank you for all our listeners who have been emailing us lately, and you can too. Our email is dmcthepodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. See you next episode.